You are listening to Moisture Festival Podcast.
Welcome to the Moisture Festival Podcast. I am Matt Baker. I perform a comedy and stunt show.
And I'm Louis Fox. I do magic tricks, comedy, and hand shadow puppets.
And we both have performed at the Moisture Festival for a number of years. So welcome to the podcast where we give you a peek behind the curtains of the performers and the people that make the Moisture Festival happen.
You get a little bit of a look at their journey to getting on stage and a little bit about what they do in their time off stage.
So welcome, and be sure to check out all the episodes of the Moisture Festival podcast, because there's a lot.
There is a lot. And if you aren't familiar with the Moisture Festival, it's a four-week festival celebrating variety arts. So that's hula hoopers, magicians, people who balance on their hands, acrobats, pretty much anything you can think of.
It is the largest festival of its kind in the entire world, folks. In the entire world, it's the largest festival, and it features some of the best entertainers and comedians working today.
The festival happens in the months of March and April, and not only do they have world-class variety acts, but they have a burlesque venue that runs for 1 week only, and get your tickets for that early, because that always sells out.
Actually, 95%, we've crunched the data, Louis.
Yes.
95% of the shows sell out. So if you're listening to this in the months of March and April, be sure to go to moisturefestival.org and get your tickets today.
Yes, especially if your bucket list item is to see the opening show. Get them now.
Absolutely.
In this episode of the Moisture Festival podcast, we welcome in a Pacific Northwest magician, Matthew Laszlo.
We learn about the origins of his performing name, as well as his start in magic.
We learn about all the crazy tricks that he's doing involving a straitjacket and electrocution, shooting a t-shirt out of a t-shirt cannon, and all the things that can go wrong while performing that in a live audience. It's a fantastic interview, and you guys are going to love it. Let's get to it. Today's guest is a magician out of the Pacific Northwest. He has been on Penn & Teller's Fool Us, season 14 of America's Got Talent, and Masters of Illusion. He might be the youngest person we have interviewed on the podcast. We welcome in Matthew Laszlo. Yay!
Hey, thanks you guys.
And should we, is it Matthew or Matt? I go by Matt, but...
Then I'll go by Matthew, yeah.
Okay.
You can, there you go, Mateo, Matthias, I don't know, whatever
you
you're into.
But you go by all those?
We can, yeah.
When you introduce yourself to people, what do you say? My name is Mateo or...
Matthew. Okay, I go right, by yeah. Matthew. And okay. Then sometimes Matt, people say that, but I have a feeling that's going to get real confusing for us fast.
No,
so,
no.
Yeah, because
I get,
Matthew,
you know, because I get flack from my friends, because when I go to Spanish speaking countries, I'll say, or even my wife, I'll say, my name is, Mateo. And she's like, your name is Matt. It's not Mateo.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that drove my girlfriend crazy of different. There's variations, you know, with Matthew. And it just, it's like, no, you're Matthew. That's
yeah.
There's no, you know, gray area there at all. So
I had a blast when I was in Mexico and I lived as Luis.
Yeah, he did confuse a lot of people.
That's
also
great.
His wife was very mad at that.
Yeah seems to be
well, just because like I only asked because, you know, I go by Matt, and on all the promo that I've watched and all the stuff that I've read about you, it is Matthew. So that's a conscious choice, or is that just I never went by Matt? And, you know,
yeah, I never went by Matt. My full name growing up was Matthew Laszlo White. That was the only stage name change that I've made, was going from Matthew Laszlo White, which is too long, to Matthew Laszlo. I mean, I feel like Matt White wouldn't be the best, you know, performance.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the Breaking Bad main character's distant cousin or something.
Well, actually, the real reason for changing that was, I think I was 11. It was like my first big show, and I printed out like the intro, you know, of, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Laszlo White, magician, you know, and it cut off right on the wrong place. And the MC said, ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Laszlo, White Magician. And that was my my intro, and I was like, I gotta change that. So it's the only name change.
I kind of like that, actually. The White Magician.
The White Magician, yeah.
Like 90% of magicians.
But in case you were worried.
In case.
Oh, wait, God. So Laszlo's your middle name? Laszlo's
my middle name. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, Hungarian, and feel like that goes well with magic, so here we are.
Yeah. I actually kind of like the three names for a magician, honestly. Matthew, Laszlo. If you came up with something other than white, you know, to bypass the White Magician part,
yeah,
maybe another state, but like, you know, Jonathan Taylor, who's that famous guy from, you know, Tool Time?
Oh, yeah.
JTT, Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor, that guy. I like the three names. It's kind of cool, man.
I feel like it's got a rhythm to it. It's good.
Yeah.
For sure. Like
all right. So Matthew, how do you describe what you do?
I mean, I feel like in this Moisture Festival group, just saying magician is kind of boring. I mean, it's there's not much more to that. I would say I do a lot of stage magic and story driven magic. I try to take something and put my own spin on it. I mean, I know that's probably everyone, but that's what I like to do, and it's been a fun creative process so far.
So how'd you get into magic?
Oh, this is like the classic story. My grandpa, when I was 5 years old, my
grandpa had never seen snow.
Yes. And I had dreamed of seeing snow my entire life. And then
never seen magic. My grandpa took me to Florida.
We lived in a small town. Magic was banned.
The Footloose. The Footloose story.
The Footloose of magic. Yeah.
So your granddad was a magician? Yeah.
Legitimately, my grandfather said, you got to check out this magician. And Louis, you're going to laugh about this. Probably Matt too, because if you know magic, this is like the worst possible magician to have your entry into magic be tied to, for me at least. But he said, you've got to check out Chris Angel. This was the guy that he was like, you know, watching on TV. And I looked him up on YouTube. I started really, I mean, this is around 2007-08. YouTube had just really started, and there were all these tutorials on magic on, and still are, but I felt like I was kind of just coming up in the time where maybe people a little bit older were watching DVDs, or I mean, still all the best magic is in books, but I started learning online and on YouTube, and it was so accessible. So I felt pretty lucky to kind of be right at the start of people posting how to do magic online. And that's how I started.
That's amazing.
You remember your first trick you streamed?
Yeah. Do you know, it's called Double Coincidence. I don't even know if that's the name of it, but it's like a prediction with two cards. And it was the first thing that I figured out. And I still like that.
Wait, what was the trick that your grandfather did for you that you were like, that's my jam?
He didn't do any magic. He was just like, check it out.
Oh,
check it out. He just kind of pointed me in that direction. And then I remember he was really excited about it. So it was kind of this motivation of like, I got to show you some magic. I got to figure this out and impress my grandpa with this. So
nice.
Right. So your grandpa came up, and this was in my notes for later, but this is kind of weird. When I was Google searching you, I think I saw a picture of you and your grandpa with a toenail painted.
Oh, that's one of my favorite memories. We were getting pedicures together, you know, grandson, grandfather activity for the ages. And and it was just a slight dare of sorts of let's just both get matching toenails. And then we have that on the internet. I don't know how you found that.
Yeah.
But
that's the magic trick called Double Coincidence.
Yes.
It was a little toenails. Website called famousmalefeet.com.
Oh yeah, right on there.
Hey.
Yeah.
So you grew up in the islands, the San Juan Islands, Orcas Island, and population 5,000 people. I do imagine it would be difficult to find, you know, colleagues or people that are interested also in magic. It is, since it's such a sort of small interest. Was there other people around that area when you were learning magic? Were there other people that was interested that you could sort of you know, sort of bounce ideas off of or learn from?
Highly competitive here. I mean, we have like 4,998 other magicians that gets cutthroat here. No, I was the only magician in the town that I know of. And I remember really like going to Seattle, going to Pike Place. That was my thing, is going to that magic counter and coming back home with a whole bunch of stuff to figure out and learn. And yeah, the islands are kind of it's a weird thing for artists, because I feel like there's a lot of creative people here and a lot of opportunity here for people to really succeed. But it's also such a bubble that, you know, there's not those resources. I couldn't necessarily just, you know, find a neighbor who had studied magic and learn that way, which I do miss. But I also feel like, you know, being able to, I grew up working at the movie theater, and I could perform on the stage and practice on the stage in exchange for running the projector. So I just had a key to a theater at 13, which at the time it was like, this is, you know, whatever. But I realize now how lucky that, you know, situation was, and only could really happen in a small town like this. Everyone knows everyone. And it's like, yeah we want to see you succeed and put on these shows. And it's this really special thing that I am so grateful for.
I saw a video of you, and you were doing a trick, and you had mentioned that you, part of the trick or the premise was that you worked in a movie theater. And I think you were showing some celebrity, you know, famous, you know, Hollywood actors or something. And I was going to ask you if that was true, because, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of these magical premises are a little bit farce, you know? And so I found it interesting that you were, you know, implementing like a personal true story about yourself. Is that, do you strive to do that? Or is that just like, oh, this just happened to fit with this particular trick?
Yeah, I try to do that. And I try to make sure that it was real. You know, when I was 5, I'd never seen snow before. And it's a really core memory of things.
Hey, let me explain that joke.
Yeah, please, because this is so inside.
So David Copperfield, in a special where he made it snow, his introduction to the piece was, when I was a kid, I had never seen snow. I'm like, dude, you grew up in New York.
Yeah.
But so that's what we're referencing.
And I also feel like every magician saw that and was like, I was having trouble writing patter for this. That's it now. I'm just gonna, you know, take that and run with it. So you kind of feel like these tropes get repeated so much within magicians.
Well, that's what I liked about the piece that you were doing, was that it was like, it was seemed very personal. And that's, I didn't know if you had made that up or not. So it is true that you worked at a movie theater, and that's amazing that you had sort of access to a stage, because when you practice at your house, whatever sort of art form you're doing, especially if it's something that you will eventually do in front of people, it is sort of hard to visualize, sort of replicate what it would be like to be on a stage in front of people, because it is different doing it in your basement or your kitchen or whatever, to be able to practice it on the big stage and understand what the movements are, how you have to hide things. I would imagine that's like
in your living room, it's 2 steps to walk to that table. In that theater, it's 8 steps.
Exactly.
Yeah, completely. And that was kind of the first shows I did was, you know, this theater had the 35mm projector. And all of these, you know, mom and pop theaters around, this was probably 10 years ago, were closing because they couldn't afford to go to the digital projectors. Mm-hmm. And my mom stepped in and ran this crowdfunding campaign to upgrade to the digital projector. And part of that was me doing a magic show for the very first time at this theater. And, you know,
you saved the theater.
Yeah. Is it the Matthew Laszlo Theater now? Is that what
it's Yeah, exactly. Just got to name it. It was a really special time to have access, where I felt like they were so grateful to have us helping out and in there, and, you know, having access to that. You're right. It's special.
And then, do you have formal theater training? Like, did you do theater in high school or?
A bit. There was no high school theater program here. So we were just in community theater, and I did that a bit. Love that. Total theater kid growing up. And then I mean, but no formal. I wouldn't say any acting, any theater training, theatrical training in any way.
In a town of
You
5,000, I have a friend who grew up on a small island in the San Juans, and he had to take a motorboat over to high school or like elementary school every day. Like, what is your, they don't have a drama class. How many kids are in your class in high school?
think graduating class was like 13 or something. It's like it's crazy. It's
Crazy.
small. We don't have to take a boat to some kids took a boat to high school to
Yeah.
go to a different island, but people are it's like the total small town driving your tractor to high school type thing. Literally people doing that. So definitely can relate to that.
So when you're learning magic as a young kid, is that like in high school, is that something that people were like, oh, this is cool? Or were they like, oh, don't go to prom with that guy, you know?
I don't know. I was trying to think back on childhood and how that relates to being a magician, because it was such a weird place where I felt like there weren't the divisions of like the football players like
Yeah.
beating up the kid that does card tricks. It just didn't feel like that. And it felt pretty quickly accepted, which I think I was lucky for.
Awesome.
I don't know, Louis, when you were growing up, how magic was received in school, or if were you performing in school? Were
I don't think
you
he
who
was
was
out
it?
as a magician.
Yeah,
Yeah, I was
closeted
still in the
magician.
closet.
Okay,
Now,
gotcha. Yeah.
how was it, Louis?
It was the 90s. It was a different era. Like, it's a very different thing. But I was also a skateboard kid too. So I think they kind of evened each other out.
He also didn't go to school.
Yeah.
That was
My
his thing.
graduating class was sixth grade. You found some mentors along the way, right? Like you worked with Doug Bennett, who's one of my heroes. And so Doug Bennett was like he worked a lot with Doug Henning, but how'd you end up connected with him?
Yeah, that was a great I can source most of the strong connections and mentorships I've had in Magic back to IMX, which was a convention that was around for like a few years in Vegas. I think it quickly kind of morphed into something else. But anyway, I met Joni Spina. I don't know if you're familiar. So I met her there, and she gave me Doug's contact. I think I was around 12, 11 there. And that was the other place I met Johnny Thompson there and got his contact. This is like craziest thing, because super young, meet him and he gives me his cell phone number, like, hey, if you're working on something, give me a call, let me know. And that was so in that like few days, meeting Doug, meeting Johnny, and having these fantastic relationships from there, working with both of them for years. But a lot of that started, I think, a few years later, and Doug was such a amazing connection right away. Like we were just on the same page creatively, and the routines that we worked on led to Fool Us, led to everything. And really, he's a massive voice in my show, and I felt so lucky to spend that time working with him. Yeah.
For those of us who aren't like magicians or hip to the sort of how it works, like what is a magician mentorship like? And it seems to be pretty, that sort of like a standard thing that young magicians sort of seek out, like a, a protege
Yeah.
or, someone to sort of mentor them. Tell us what that looks like, like how that works.
They're the ones that guide you out of, okay, this is how it comes out of the box. And I feel like I don't know, for myself at least, I can't I love the performance part. I don't like the writing part. I don't like script writing. I feel like I struggle with that. So to have someone to come in and collaborate on ideas and the scripting of how this all comes together was so helpful. And yeah, I love having a team to collaborate with. I know some people it's very, insulated for magicians, and this is, my process. I don't want, people involved, and that's totally some magicians, but for me it's a big team, and I love that process.
Probably comes from your theater background where it's more collaborative.
Possibly. Yeah. And like the new show right now is, you know, a whole nother, we have a theatrical director who's directing the show, and he's done musicals and is bringing that. And I, as much as you can incorporate a different angle, for me, the better things get. If it's just a, thinking like a magician, you, I'm sure, pretty standard within magic. But if you can get away from that, I feel like, and start to incorporate other aspects of theater, of performance, that's where special things happen for me.
Well, so you mentioned musical. Do you sing in the current show?
No way.
Wait, hold on. Let's talk. Let's tell the people what the current show is, because you are the sort of face of this new sort of Broadway style magic show called Shazam. And sort of, as you were talking about earlier, it has dancing. It has, I think there's a llama at some point.
A
live llama. Like, it's like a full on, like, you know, show, a crazy show with, like, you know, a cast, and you're sort of the center magician. How did you get involved with that?
Yeah, that's another crazy story. There's this magic convention, the Magic Jamboree. I know, Louis, you're familiar with that, down in Newburgh. The Kramian, Stan Kramian, this legendary magician from, you know, 70s through 90s, touring, just amazing guy. And his son, Rick, I met Stan and Rick there and had this instant connection, and we kept in touch. And we were always kind of, he was talking about bringing his dad's show, Shazam, back out on the road and looking for a magician to do that. And it was just, for, you know, 10 plus years wasn't the right timing. And then things came together for 2019 for us to do the first version of Shazam. And it's been amazing because he's going really big on the show, which is totally anti my first instinct with a magic show, is like, how can we, like, can I fit this box inside this box and, like, pack as small as possible and get things to look as big as possible? I think that's called pack small, play big. I don't know, but something like that. And this is like, oh, we want to have a llama in the show. Let's do it. Like, let's make this happen. And, like, the only person in my life where he says something like, well, you know, the other day we were on the phone and he said, oh yeah, we're getting the elephant. And I don't know whether he's joking. Like, no one else, I feel like I would think for a moment that something like that would happen. But just the scale of the show and the, let's go for this, let's make this the best thing possible, has been so fun to be a part of.
So was it an actual elephant?
It wasn't. It's a big costume elephant. Okay. Thankfully. Well,
so this is the type of show that Kramian did. He had all these, the livestock and stuff, or is it, this is just sort of like an envision, you know, a re-embodiment of the show?
Yeah, a bit of both. He would do large scale stuff and travel with animals, which you don't see as much, definitely in the way that we're doing it. And this is also taking, I mean, his son's vision for what a magic show could be, and going for it. And he has like a lot of background in like these West End and Broadway shows, and bringing that to magic. It's just a fun time.
Yeah. I mean, I watched the video. It looks pretty awesome. I mean, is the venues you perform that show at limited by the fact that you have, you know, an actual horse and llama? And
yeah. A lot. And, we're just, this is kind of the first previews of the show starting now. And in the new year, we kick things up. But, it's been, you know, there's a lot of venues that are excited about a show like this coming in, honestly. Yeah. like it's, you know, there's some that we just see the parking lot, we're like, that's not gonna work. But a lot of times, I think because it's so different, people get excited about seeing something on stage that no one has seen.
And I like that your hospitality writer says horse stall.
And green M&Ms for the horse. Yeah,
for the llama. The llama,
for the llama. Yeah, where's the llama's dressing room? Come on, we got.
And actually, which is cool about the show is that a very dear friend of mine and a friend of Louis is and a friend of the Moisture Festival, Kurt Carlisle, is in the show.
Yes.
And he's sort of the comic relief or juggling. Like,
totally.
Is he in on the idea? Because he's an idea guy. Is he in on the script writing and stuff?
Oh yeah, he's so much fun, and it's been great getting to know him throughout this process and having him on the show. He's kind of in he's got this piece in the show that's just like it's so much fun, and then he's woven in kind of a character way as well, which I know is not his comfort zone, not my comfort zone either, of kind of that traditional like theatrical storytelling. But it's been fun to, I think, for both of us, push ourselves into a different territory. I'm like, oh wait, I have a line and it has to be delivered the same way every time. Night. What?
Yeah, I would imagine that would be challenging.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I mean, at the very beginning of this, we're working with actors on stage as well. And they're like, these magicians and jugglers, God, like, I don't know. Who are these people, and like, why can't they get it together?
Yeah.
So you know. Do you not have any freedom to go off script in it? Or
I do. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, there's scenes within it that are pretty rigid within the dialogue of, you know, the one thing to the other and playing off of people, and then there's moments where it just breaks off into more of a traditional like, how's it going? I'm gonna need someone from the audience. Let's have some fun, and it's great to have that element in there as well.
That's awesome. And you know, going back to Kurt, he is a juggler, and I actually saw a picture of you juggling flaming tennis balls. Is that a thing that is you have done, or you do, or is that in the show? Did you learn?
You only do it once.
Yeah. You two are like the Nardwual of variety performers. You're like, I see you one time and. 2004, you I that was a one-time board on a snow day type deal, and probably dumb, but boy, it was a fun video.
You can juggle a little bit,
like three balls, and you know, that's about it. I can't no additional skill besides,
well, I mean,
you know,
it is flaming. I feel like that is an addition to the
I guess. Yeah I mean, it's just like put it in slow-mo so it looks like you did that for longer, and then,
oh yeah,
you so know you, exactly. There you go. So
I like how you were like, it's a snow day, I could learn Mills Mess, or I could take these tennis balls on.
Yeah, I've got this Lego set, and then I've got tennis balls and lighter fuel, huh? Yeah, it's no, that was I've always been into, you know, weird, hey, I'm sure as we all are, let's see how far we can push this. And
who are some people that, you know, you mentioned people that you had met at the magic convention. Are there other people that sort of inspired you that maybe aren't magicians that you've sort of looked at to sort of you know, model yourself after, or you know, draw inspiration from?
There's so many.
Aside from Louis, of course.
Of course. I mean, that's like number one right there.
He was my mentor, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Little altar, you know, say a prayer every morning No, I feel like I like to draw inspiration from other places. And I'm totally blanking on other places. But yeah, it's...
What was the, I saw that you did a show in China I didn't know China, like I've been there for a show, like a Guinness World Records show, but I didn't know they had a specific show that highlighted magicians, and you were on that show. And did you have a translator? Did you do it silent? Like, talk about your experience on that.
Oh my gosh. That was such a crazy, experience. I was checking for some reason Instagram like spam folder of like, this person doesn't follow you, they want to send you a message, stuff like that. And in there was this message saying, production on this TV show, it's called, the English translation is The Amazing Magicians, which, you know, okay, title for a show, but also sounds fake. I mean, let's be honest, seeing that message in an Instagram spam folder, like fly to China in 2 weeks. That was the other bit of this. You know, and they had been trying to contact me for months, and all of my, you know, I don't have a cell phone out there. I have, you know, you can maybe try to get through Facebook or Instagram or something like that, but none of that, it wasn't going through with their firewalls around and stuff like that. So I got this message 2 weeks before shoot day, and I completely thought this is a scam, but on the off chance, I'm just going to see, you know, because this is pretty specific, and ended up getting it together to somehow get a visa, literally nice. Dropped off at the border as we're going to the flight. Had a friend fly down to San Francisco to get this all going on, and we made it, and it was wild. It was, I will never have that experience again. And, I feel so lucky that it all came together for that. It was, I did speak in the show. They had live translation. I had like as many earbuds as possible of like live translation and monitors and stuff to make it all happen. And, yeah, they're getting ready for me to go out on stage, and they say, you know, and this is a show I've never heard of. No one's heard of. And they say, have fun. There's 270 million people watching this show that you're about to do.
No pressure.
That's a rounding
error.
Please
welcome Matthew Laszlo, White Magician.
White Magician. Yeah. Here you are. And I was like, that's an error in the, you know, like the largest TV shows here, like maybe 10 million, maybe somewhere yeah. there. And you just realize like how large the scale of some of these, I mean, they're building custom props for everyone
yeah.
In the show, the custom sets that are like built in like a day and then thrown away. And there's, wow. and it was insane, and got to work with some amazing magicians over there with, and yeah, crazy experience.
Were they all Chinese magicians or?
No, it was a cool format. It was a team of five magicians from each or a few countries. So they had the USA team, the Canadian team, the German team, Japanese team, Chinese team, and they were all competing to become the you know, the country that is best at magic. And
oh, interesting.
Spoiler alert, the Chinese team won. So.
Oh. It's like the Euro.
Who saw that coming?
Magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, who was on your team?
This was Danny Cole, and oh my gosh, I'm gonna look at the poster of everything because should Blake.
Oh, you're looking
Voigt.
That up. Oh, Blake Voigt.
Yeah, Nathan Crenzo. And that was us.
Nice. Wait,
yeah.
Did you at least place? Did you medal? Did you?
We got second place.
Hey,
we
did, look at that.
Hey, we made it through all the way, and then we
applaud
we got
to the translator.
Place. Yeah, right. So we had a fun time.
Did you also tour in China or just do the show?
Just did the show. I was supposed to be on a 5-month tour in China right as COVID was hitting, and it was like the best timing to dodge that. So I haven't toured in China, and
oh,
would love to. Yeah.
Do you think they just brought you over there so they could steal your magic secrets?
Yeah, it was so, you know, dealing with the censorship on Chinese television was on a whole nother, like someone was trying to do a décolleté chair, you cover someone with a sheet, that was shut down so
really?
Quickly because of the spiritual, you just can't cover someone with a sheet on television. It's
gotcha.
Which is really problematic for a magic show because we love to do that, but
yeah,
no, it didn't work. And like someone was doing the hospitality drink act with pouring out a bunch of different drinks out of one container, and there was no alcoholic, no, a few other drinks that they were like limited real quick of like, here's milk again, you know, it got to that point. So
you can do yeah. milk, you can do goat milk and horchata.
And horchata, yeah. Could you imagine that would just kill that trick?
Wait, didn't you invent the milk thingy?
No, I invented a different thing.
Oh, okay.
The OJ, yeah. The
yeah.
orange juice.
Yeah, the OJ got cool. shut down. No OJ no. in China.
Yeah, not allowed. Not happening.
Well, that's super cool, man.
So now you did the Moisture Fest in what, 2018?
In 2018, yeah. And it was such a blast. Oh my gosh. I've been meaning to make it back. It's always been a schedule conflict, but I've got to like just block that out and make it happen because so much fun. One of the most like fun rooms and getting your music played live.
Yeah.
What? Like, I mean, that was the thing I was blown away by. Like sending a you know, song out like a few hours before the show and like, there's no way they're going to hit this. And being dead on, it was like, wow, this is so special and just doesn't happen. So I really want to make it back.
Do you remember who was on the show when you were there? Anyone that was like stood out to you or you were excited to perform with?
Oh, Mike Caveney. I always love seeing him. He was on the same show. And yeah, it's such a fun, I mean, atmosphere backstage and getting to know all these people and meet people that you're friends with that you've known already. It's really special.
I mean, you were probably, you're 23 now, or
yeah.
So yeah. You're in 2018, you're sort of a young, you know,
yeah, almost adult. 17,
and how does like going to a show like that sort of help an up and coming magician? Does that sort of inspire you or
absolutely. Yeah.
Overwhelm you?
Oh, so inspiring, completely.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times I'm doing shows on my own and it's less of that, you know, group feel, and to be in a variety and have a bunch of people around you and seeing, you know, all these amazing performers together. It's special.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, like, I think my first Moisture Festival was like the second one, and I was still sort of up and coming, and I was on the bill with all these people who I were like my, you know, I idolized, and I was like, what the hell am I doing on this show? This, I got no business. And then, you know, I did well, and it was like a nice moment where I was like, oh wow, like I'm not an outsider here. Like there's a reason I'm here and I belong here also. Did you have that moment also?
Yeah, I feel like I've consistently had that in about all of these situations of what am I doing here? Like or the feeling of, do I belong in this group? And you know, your gut answer is no. These are the people you watched growing up and that, you know, you've looked up to for years. You're not one of them. And then quickly, I feel like you realize how open that world is and how just like, even I remember Louis, the first time I met you, this was at the San Juan County Fair. Yep. And I've always like, I think when you start in anything, and I still get nervous around magicians, like a whole bunch of people that don't know much about magic, and no problem. One magician in there is going to ruin my night of like, I don't, you know, let's, you know, get a little closely guarded around this. And yeah, just like the experience time and time again of like meeting you, Louis, of coming up and saying, hey, you know, that was great. I have some ideas. You want to talk about that? And like, we spent an hour backstage going through, well, what if you did this here? And it's like everyone is so, not everyone, but most people in this business are so nice and so generous with their time and thoughts. And it's the more and more I've been accepted into that and felt like I'm a part of that. It's just been a really great feeling.
Yeah. Now I have a couple specific questions about stuff you do in your show that I saw on video. One was you were escaping a straitjacket, like I think by being electrocuted or something. Like, is that did I interpret that correctly, or was it lightning bolts or something? Was there a Tesla coil? What is going on?
Right on. Yeah, we find a lightning storm, get a big metal rod.
Nebraska.
Yeah, it has to be right the weather for that one to work. It's a electrified straitjacket escape. It's what we end the show with. That was Doug Bennett creation. Mm-hmm. Something that David Copperfield end of special reject. They were trying to make it work, they couldn't quite figure it out, and we put together our version of it, and it's one of my favorite things. I love it. Twists and turns and a lot of excitement.
So is the premise like, if I don't get out of this, I'm getting electrocuted, or are you getting electrocuted, or like, you know, the visual that you are getting electrocuted of?
Yeah, you got, I have 60 seconds to escape. And if you don't within that time, that's when the, electricity turns on, and you know, you'll have to see what happens next. Come to the show.
Nice. I guess it's cheaper than like a pool of piranhas or something.
Yeah, as a
travels better.
I don't know. They got a horse and a llama, dude. I mean, how much more work is piranhas?
Yeah.
Just some plastic bags.
One this like piranha at the fair. I threw a ping pong ball in a glass of water.
And a stack of paperwork. They've all had their shots. It's all good. Don't let me in.
And then the other thing I saw in the show is you do, and you did this on a few shows, the t-shirt cannon. You do a card trick. It's a card prediction with the t-shirt cannon. And then the card is on your shirt. I don't have a question about the trick. I just have a question. Have you ever, because you shoot a t-shirt into the audience, have you ever accidentally like hit somebody? Because I always tell people don't throw stuff into the audience based off of my bad experiences of throwing things into the audience.
Oh my gosh.
Tell me, is there been a horror story with that? Or
thankfully, no. And that's hilarious because you're saying don't throw anything into the audience. I'm like, well, a t-shirt can is clearly that's not what you're talking about here.
Air compressor.
You're talking about throwing. What about 300 psi here? That's a different story. I have broken walls on Fool Us. Actually, that's my favorite, not theirs, but mine is they told me aim for the camera. They've got a boom camera, aim for the camera, it will make a great shot. And I was like, great. I don't think they thought I could like actually hit it. But I broke the teleprompter.
Oh my goodness.
The Fool Us shoot with the t-shirt cannon. So I have not hit anyone. I have not. I aim so high and it usually either in a smaller room, it'll hit the ceiling and then bounce down. But
they're like, the trick didn't fool us, but how did you hit the teleprompter?
How did you hit the, exactly. So
you're in the backyard training.
This is my ulterior motive. But yeah, we've never had anything crazy happen there. And that t-shirt can is just so much fun to
I like it as a prop, as a visual, as even just watching it on video. I'm like, that is a cool look. You just holding that thing. And then sort of the people wondering like, what's going to happen with this?
And if you go back to Fool Us, that shot of the t-shirt cannon being fired into the audience is so good because it just like at the camera, and it's so I think it's worth a teleprompter. I don't know, we'll see.
And then if you watch the rest of the episode, no one knows their lines.
Yes. Yeah. Coming up
during COVID, you know, I did see that you did like a drive-in magic show. You know, Louie and I adapted to doing like Zoom shows, which I'm assuming you did too, but neither of us, I don't think, I'll speak for Louie, that we did a drive-in performance. Did like what prompted that? How did that go? How did you promote it? How did you even do it? Like, who showed up? I mean, so many questions. Because the only picture I saw was like through the windshield, like a cracked windshield, and like you're doing, you know, who knows what.
Yeah, that was from the t-shirt cannon. Another bad aim, just like right in there. That was a lot of fun. I mean, this is early on in COVID, early in 2020, and at that point they hadn't cleared drive-ins yet, so we had a whole thing with the public health here of trying to do this safely because they didn't want people, you know, in their cars next to each other. That was too much, which is crazy to think back to that time. And, you know, we just didn't know what it was. So we finally got, you know, a whole field of cars and this giant blow up screen. We showed a movie afterwards. We were showing classic films in the field. And I put together a little show and, you know, snuck in. My entrance was in a classic car in the trunk.
Oh, that's cool.
Trunk, and that was a lot of fun. And I mean, so weird to, I think we've all been in some bizarre performing, you know, situations of a language barrier or, you know, something that you just can't quite connect. But in cars was a whole nother level. I've never had that amount of separation and people honking as applause. I was like, I guess they like that, you know, noise complaints from the neighbor. It's just
were the
like
hecklers just like,
yeah,
long beeps,
blinkers, all blinkers.
And then like if it's an okay trick, they'd hit the windshield wipers.
If they don't like it, they hit the hazards.
We had some fun stuff in there around that. And, I mean, I don't think that's, hopefully that will never happen again, but it was a lot of fun in a situation where, you know, to me, Zoom just feels so disconnected. And
yeah,
I mean, that was still pretty disconnected for the drive-in, but I liked at least, you know, bringing people out of their house for a moment. And even if it was in their car,
I think if I were to do that, I would try and offend one person just so that they walked, you know, and then watching them like,
drive away,
try and like make a U-turn out, like 3-point turn to leave.
Oh yeah, one person leaving in that is the worst.
Very like... dramatic.
Yeah, yeah.
So if people want to see you, they can check you out a couple different places, MatthewLaszlo.com. Also, your the new show that you're working on that you're touring with, and which is ShazamShow.com. And that is that what you're doing full time now, or are you still doing your own magic stuff? And then
that's the show. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
So, and that's going to be at theaters around the Pacific Northwest or around the United States next 2024. Jeez.
2024 things kick off. We'll be all over in the US and yeah, it's going to be a good time.
And you post the tour dates up there that you can see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And seriously, we'd like to have you come back to the Moisture Festival. So schedule off a little bit of time. It's hard.
Right. Yeah. I got to make it happen. Ah. Yeah. Yeah. It's got to happen. Yeah. And there's no cars there.
No.
I'm in.
Maybe we should add a drive-in show. That'd be kind of cool. I would be opposed to that. All right, buddy. Hey, thanks so much. And go to MatthewLaszlo.com if you want to shoot him a message or see some cool videos and see the t-shirt cannon.
There
cool.
you go.
All right, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's it for today, folks. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out more information like who's performing, how to volunteer, how to contribute, be sure to go to the Moisture Festival website, which is moisturefestival.org.
If you like this podcast, you can check out the podcast that Matt and I do called the Odd and Offbeat Podcast. Yeah. You can get on all of the podcast places, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, and where we talk about weird news stories of the day. It's a good time.
Yeah. If you like this podcast, you will love that because it is all things weird. And that has links to my personal page and Louis Fox's personal page if you want to follow what we do individually.
So we want to thank all of the performers, donors, sponsors, volunteers who put on the Moisture Festival. It really takes a village to make this thing happen.
Absolutely. We want to thank you for listening, and we want to thank you in advance for coming out to the Moisture Festival. So be sure to check out the Moisture Festival's site. They also have a Facebook page, an Instagram page, and a YouTube page to see how you can get involved and be a part of this year's or next year's Moisture Festival. We want to thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and we hope to see you soon.